Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to another edition of the Durham Bulls podcast. And this is where we celebrate all things Durham Bulls, whether it's players or world champions or managers, the history and the celebration of all things Durham Bulls. I'm Patrick Keenis, and thank you for joining us. If this is the first time that you've joined us on the Durham Bulls podcast, you can find us and subscribe on your major podcast platforms on Apple, on Spotify, and you can even watch this video right now, the video portion of the podcast on Durham Bulls TV on YouTube. So without further ado, as we move this week, we've heard from some great names from the Durham Bulls past, Durham Bulls more recent, almost present day, Miles Mastrobrony, Ryan Stanek, Charlie Montoya, Bill Evers. They've all been guests on the podcast the last couple of months. And as we literally sit on the dawn of a brand new baseball season, it's my distinct pleasure to bring in one of my all-time favorite Durham Bulls, which is saying a lot since I've been here more than 10 years, Tristan Gray, who now is outside of the Tampa Bay Rays organization, signed as free agent with the Miami Marlins, and he'll be coming to the DBAP in no less than a week or so if the schedules hold. And it's my pleasure and honor to bring Tristan Gray in on the show. Tristan, it's so great to see you. It's so awkward to be talking to you like this in a different organization. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Pat. I'm truly honored by that that introduction.
It was all off the cuff, but no, but all dripping with love and fondness for your time here. So since the last time we saw you, a lot has changed in your life. We'll talk about baseball later, but you got married a couple of months ago to your longtime girlfriend, fiance, Madeline. Tell me about that and how Tristan Gray's personal life has now changed.
Yeah. So going through last season, she was my fiance and the wedding was scheduled as all baseball players do it for the off season. And honestly, I did not have to do much. A lot of people say that, but you know, my wife's got an amazing family. She's got amazing sisters. She's got four sisters. So the planning was really in their department, and I got to go into wedding day pretty much just ready to go, not stressed about things going wrong or this or that. And let me tell you, she had said that it was going to be like worth it. And man, that I couldn't have imagined. Like everything that she envisioned, I just got to reap the rewards. So it was incredible.
Tell me about the day. What do you remember?
Well, I remember getting there probably around noon or one. And so whenever I'm getting there, it's just like you see the whole setup, you see things getting put up and you're just waiting to get ready because the girls have been getting ready for forever.
And years, it takes guys, or a lifetime, right?
Yeah, we were just kind of just sitting there like, all right, like it's going to take us about 15 minutes to get ready for some pictures. But yeah, we were just hanging out, having a good time. And then I had to do like my pictures or whatever, get her gift, which was amazing. I had to read, and that kind of got me into the whole, like, hey, this is happening right now. Really set it in stone. And then we did our first look, and I didn't really know what to expect, but it was just an emotion that I've never felt before. And that really calmed us both, I think, to get that out of the way before the ceremony.
So we'll talk about this a little bit later, but how, since you just brought it up, how did the emotion, because you're a really emotional guy, and I love that about you. We know exactly where you stand. You love family. You love the game. You have so much respect for really anything and anyone who crosses your path. What were the emotions like as you compare them from making your major league debut a couple of months earlier in 2023 to walking down the aisle that day in November?
I can honestly say that I was more nervous walking down the aisle than it was debuting. And not even that it was like nervous about things working out. It's more of just like, what did I do to deserve this? Like, I'm in this situation that, you know, only I know a lot of people go through it, but it just felt super special. And it's like such a big moment that I my legs just walking down the aisle were a lot more jittery than they were in the box at Camden. So
did you feel your legs more on your home run trot at Camden Yards or did you feel them more when you're walking down the aisle?
I felt a bigger relief after getting married than it was making the debut, for sure.
When did you, because I can speak from experience, it took me more than a couple of weeks to be comfortable and not, it felt so awkward to refer to Catherine as my wife, not my girlfriend, not my fiance, because when you take those vows and you're done, it's no longer, you know, the girlfriend, it's no longer the fiance, but saying wife sounds weird. It just sounds weird. Are you still in that phase or have you kind of gone past that?
It's funny, like going into it, I was really conscious and like practice, like, okay, I'm going to say this. So it's actually switched. Maddie or Madeline still keeps calling me her boyfriend sometimes and it slips. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like if I were to do that, it'd be, you know, a whole big thing. But no, it's funny. I just like to give her some mess about that.
Yeah. But how special was it for you and your baseball brothers to have them be part of your special day? And who was there with you?
So Josh Lowe, Miles Mastroianni were invited. And then Bly Madris was one of my best men, who was a bull for a short time. And then Ryan Bolt was also one of my groomsmen. So, you know, it just shows that there's a lot of things that this game can bring to you, not just in the time and the seasons that you're with them, but for a lifetime.
That's perfectly said. Perfectly said. I don't know the story of how you and Maddie met.
Okay.
How did you?
So, it was in 2020. We get sent home from spring training. And so I'm at home for the first time for a summer, back in Houston. And I was just on the apps, the dating apps, and really just passing time more than anything. I didn't really think too much. I wasn't trying to meet anybody. So we ended up matching and we were talking for a few months. And then she's like, hey, like, would you want to meet? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I guess I was just too nervous. I didn't want to mess it up by, you know, saying, hey, do you want to meet? And she get creeped out. So we met up in downtown Houston, which was kind of crazy to think about now looking back, but we just met downtown. And, about the third date, I met her family, because that's just, what else are you going to do? Like, it's come hang out. So, from then on, we were together.
I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed about at all about that story. That's just how people meet nowadays. I met my wife on eHarmony. We heard from Ryan Stanek a couple of weeks ago. He met his wife on Instagram through a random message to his wife. So it's just the way, especially working in the industry, in the field that we are. We're nights, we're weekends, no days off. It's very, we don't have the traditional means of meeting people like others may.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So enough about the dating game here. let's now move on to I guess we'll start at the present and we'll kind of back up a little bit. So you're now at the Miami Marlins.
Yeah.
You signed as a free agent a couple of months ago and you just finished up your first camp with the Marlins and you'll be breaking with the AAA Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. What was that process like? Was it familiar, because Peter Bendix and a lot of the former Durham Bulls were picked up by the Marlins either through free agents or trades, and how did it differ? What was the comparison between the two?
I was honestly a little nervous going into free agency. I know where the game is at in terms of just they cut the teams, so there's not as many levels, there's not as many guys in organizations, and jobs are just hard to come by. So going into it, I was a little nervous. But whenever it happened, everything kind of happened really fast. I went into it like whoever's going to be interested is going to call immediately whenever free agency starts. So I got calls from a few teams and Peter called. And I just found out that he had moved to Miami. And I was honest with him. I said, hey, man, like I was just with you for the last 6 years and I thought I did well enough to make it up. You know, I just want to make sure I'm not putting myself in that same situation. And he was honest with me and that's what I really appreciated about him, is he didn't try to sugarcoat things. He understood that it was valid to feel that the way that I felt. And ultimately I felt like this was the best situation to come into. And shortly after that, then all of the Rays and Marlins exchanges started happening, which is great because you always want to know people whenever you meet and go into a new team. So, so far my experience with them and throughout camp has been amazing. All the guys, the coaches, I don't know if it's just like that everywhere because it was the same way with the Rays. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm just fortunate and blessed to yeah. continue to be in these types of situations.
How much has your perspective changed and your depth of understanding of baseball as a business from the time when the Pirates drafted you to then trading you to the Rays and then with the Rays for several years, bridging that COVID year and then getting to Durham over the last 2.5 seasons to now, as far as your appreciation, your understanding, your frustration and all those things with the game?
The one thing that I've really realized is that it is hard to, one, make it to the big leagues and then two, to stay there. Those are the two things that you kind of get into the game in the lower levels and you don't really know. You just expect that I'm just going to progress through this year and eventually be there. It's just not the case. It is long seasons. It's a lot of sacrifice. It's just situations that you never thought you would have to deal with because no one ever talks about them. Free agency being one of them, you're just like, well, like you're kind of just dependent on them calling again. It's almost like entering the draft or something like that. But on the flip side, it just shows you that you see the guys that stick around and you see the guys that are everyday players and you're like, well, okay, what did they do? Or what do I have to do to become one of them? But that's a lot of what I've learned the last 3 years, especially being in Durham and just watching so many guys go up and down and especially on the pitching side too.
Yeah. So what did Peter and what have the Marlins told you about what their needs may or may not be, how you may or may not fit in their plans? Because you went to big league camp and got a long look, but you're not on that coveted 40-man roster at this stage as you were when the Rays called you up last fall.
Yeah. He was just saying like he needs a left-handed bat on the bench. That was one of the things and that he truly believed that I can do that as well as my defensive. He knows that I can play all four infield positions and I can play him at a big league level. So the only thing that he wanted me to work on is just cutting down the strikeouts and the swing and misses. And also with that, the whole free agency process, I got to talk to a couple of managers and Skip was one of the guys that said like, hey man, like I watched your film. Like he took the time to kind of see what kind of player I was. And he said, dude, I think it's there. Like I know that it's there. And the hitting coach Mabry, we've talked about it and there's some things that we can do. So that was a lot of what camp was just kind of trying to implement the new things that they were trying to get me to learn. Mm-hmm. And with that comes, some trial and error and you don't always get the success that you want. But they were super encouraging and like, dude, we saw the work that you put in. We saw it working. So don't be upset about this going down. We know that you can be a part of this team. You're fit. The team likes you and as well as I like them. And so now it's more of just staying ready and being able to go up there and produce whenever I get the chance.
What's it like for you and this small sample size, the season is just beginning, but switching leagues is a big deal. I mean, you've been in the American League, focused on the Yankees, focused on mm-hmm. Toronto, Baltimore, and all the others. The Marlins are now in the National League and haven't been there since you were drafted with the Pirates, and that's been several years now. How do you deal with that and preparing for all new different teams, all new different arms?
Yeah, I think the International League is good because if you get traded within the AAA teams that are in the International League, I've looked at the schedule, I'm like, I was a little bummed to be facing the same teams that I have been facing. I was hoping to go some cool places like Columbus or Indy or, Worcester again, because the time we went there, I loved it. But no, I mean, we're playing Norfolk, we're playing Gwinnett, we're playing Charlotte, Memphis, it's the same team. So there could be some good in that though, knowing what I'm getting myself into and just knowing the trips in advance. It hasn't changed anything for me. Yeah.
And hopefully you won't be in Jacksonville very long, but as long as you're there, that's a very hitter's friendly ballpark for a left-handed bat like yours and a really small wall down the right field line. I think it's what, 317 with about a 4-foot high wall?
Well, so they changed, they brought in center field. It's not 420 anymore. And they brought in, they took out the stands and they created a big wall.
Oh no.
But it's still not far back. Like it still looks hitter friendly for sure. But yeah, that center field ring brought in, it was a game changer for sure.
Yeah, that gobbled up a lot of home runs out there. So so let's go back to the fall before we get into kind of the breadth of your Durham Bulls career. Middle of September of last year, you get a special visit from Michael Johns, the one you've been waiting for and waiting for, and certainly deserved several years before you actually got it, but you continue to grind. I don't know the story. I know bits and pieces of the story of how Michael Johns told you were going to the big leagues. What's the story?
Yeah, I had a couple of buddies that from college that came into town. They were watching, I think we were playing Louisville. I was just having an okay series, just still there, still in Durham again, you know, get to that point. So I go to sleep with my phone turned off, or at least on silent, because why would it be turned on at this point? And I just wake up to a banging on my room door, not my apartment front door, but my room door. It's like, this is weird. So I open it up and I don't have my contacts in, and it's just MJ standing there looking at me. And it just, you go from such a daze, you wake up, and just to see him there was crazy, because I already knew what it was. As soon as you see your manager in your room, you know. So, but yeah, he told me all this information, and I was just trying to retain it because my mind is just going off the charts. I'm thinking about having to call my parents and calling my fiance at the time. And yeah, because she was also in New York. And so she was, and so he told me that we were going to Baltimore. I had to get on a flight at like 10:30, which is a few hours later. So actually worked out great, because my wife could just hop on the train and go down. But no, that moment was, even though it's blurry, technically, I'll never forget it.
Literally blurry with no contact lenses. And I think some of the other cracks in the story were MJ, he kept trying to call your phone. Mm-hmm. Nobody was answering. He wasn't sure what apartment was yours, if I remember correctly. And
oh yeah,
he was trying to call all kinds of teammates of yours trying to find out, but it was late and not everybody was answering, and they're pounding on the wrong doors. And you know, this is the most important delivery of a message that you're about to receive, and he can't track you down, and he's in a panic.
There was a little frustration in telling me, because it took so long. But no, I got the message nonetheless.
Yeah. Start to finish, do you have any idea how much time had elapsed from the time that he began pursuing Tristan Gray to the time he was pounding on your door?
It was probably around an hour and a half to maybe more, unfortunately. But now I keep my phone on. So
there is the bottom line. There is the bottom line. So I wanted to get into a couple of stories. But before we do, just, it will be certainly very odd for me and for all of your teammates who are breaking camp with Durham again to have you come into the DBAP here in a week, go to the other clubhouse, which used to be our clubhouse and no longer is, but it's now the visiting clubhouse. Have you thought through what that is going to be like for as many memories as and as much import as you've had on the Bulls and the Bulls fans and the championships? Has that crossed your mind yet, or is it too soon?
No, I mean, as soon as I saw it on the schedule, you know, just a huge smile on my face, because I just love playing there. I'm glad. I wish we would go there more. I think we were only coming the one time. But this past 3 years being in Durham, and just all the memories, all of the guys that I've met, the games that I've gotten to play in front of all those fans. I tell every single person that I've ever come across in minor league baseball after I've been there, it's like, there's no place like there. There just isn't. You can compare them to like other nice stadiums, but the thing about Durham is that the fans are in it from the first inning. Like if you turn a big double play in the first inning or the second inning or the third, like they're cheering, like they're, it's just a baseball. What do you hope a baseball game would be? There's other places where they don't get into it unless the game is close and to the seventh, eighth or ninth. And I've talked with Cal Stevenson about this and Jim Haley. I saw them this spring and we were talking, and we reference it as if it's like a movie. It just, whenever you're on the Durham Bulls, and I know that's cliche or a pun, but it really is. It just, there's something about it. And That's the best way I could describe it.
Are there specific memories of the time that you played there? Is there a game? Is there an at bat? Is there a moment? Is there a fan? Is there, when you think about your time in Durham, what comes to mind?
One of the, I mean, a lot of the walk-offs.
You had a lot.
Dalton Kelly's one of them. Is just ingrained in my mind because it was just one of the cooler things. It was Oppo over the monster. And then obviously the one I got to hit in your amazing call that just adds so much to it. That game was, that whole series against Norfolk in the playoff hunt, just back and forth with a very good team. Just coming down to the last games, going to Charlotte to end it with the three games, but we had to win, and we were down, and just that entire series, I mean, it's one that I'll never forget. And then obviously the national championship in Vegas.
You were on base. I want to talk about the national championship game in Vegas because I was not there. More on that in a second. But you were on base last summer during a game that Michael Johns mentioned that it was the third favorite game of all time for him in his baseball career. And the other two were when he was in the dugout in World Series games with the Rays in 2020. Mm-hmm. It was July 4th, last summer. 5-0 Tides, who have beaten the crud out of the Bulls basically all year. Early state is second half. They're, you know, beginning to pull away, and the Bulls are fighting to get back to 500. Bulls are down 5-0 in the bottom of the ninth inning and stage, to me, the biggest rally I've ever been a part of, unforeseen. I mean, who would have seen the Bulls scoring six times? It's the 4th of July. It's 11,000 people, red, white, and blue towels. And you're on base when Basabe comes up in that ninth inning. There were so many key moments, long at bats, you know, base hits with two strikes to keep the dream alive. What do you remember about that July 4th game?
I remember being in Jacksonville here July 3rd. So then it's a 6-hour bus ride after a game, which is like the old schedule. But it's just tough to do nonetheless. So seeing the way that that game ended up, knowing how exhausted everybody was from, you know, playing the day before, driving 6 hours and playing the next day, everybody pulling together and, getting that kind of win, is obviously special. Any walk-off is great, but especially to a team that has been handing it to you all year, to do it whenever you felt like you could have just rolled over. I think that is something that propelled us in, to at least getting the playoffs and facing them, because we knew that they were going to be there. So we wanted to be there and hopefully knock them off. But
I mean, I really do think that was the hinge point of the entire second half. I think if you score three runs, lose 5-3, game effort, Tides beat the Bulls again. I don't know if there would have been that magic, because frankly, when the Bulls were in Rochester and struggling, and I'd been asked by Josh Wetzel, the broadcaster for Rochester, he said, you know, on the air, on a pregame interview with the Red Wings, last question, Patrick, the Bulls always have this magic. Do you think it's coming this year? And on the air, I said, no, I mean, I just don't feel it. I don't see the pieces coming together behind the scenes. You always, the previous years, the previous big runs the Bulls had, you could kind of feel it, you know, kind of chugging like the ducks swimming underwater. You see the legs flapping, but let's calm on the surface. But I didn't see the underwater legs really moving, like there's a run coming here, but I just didn't see it. So I was as shocked as anybody was with that second half run for the Bulls over the last, you know, 50 or 60 games.
I remember being in Gwinnett because I had just came back down, and they asked me if I wanted my option days. And they were like, do you want your option? I was like, absolutely not. I knew exactly where we were going to be. And I tell everybody, like, you play, especially if you're going to grind the whole season, it is so worth it to celebrate. Not everybody gets to celebrate. I've talked to many people that have never celebrated before. They had their entire minor league career and never won anything. And it's just special. It's special to have that with a group of guys that work really hard.
I mean, that celebration in Gwinnett was like a nightclub. It was pitch black in the locker room. I mean, I made the mistake of wearing my nice sneakers, my nice jeans. And you know, by the time I got down there to be part of the celebration, a small, small part of the celebration, it's as if there was 3 inches of standing alcohol on the floor that's all tarped and lockers are somewhat tarped. It's been peeling off. Can you give the fans just a sense of what those celebrations, because you've been part of so many of what they're like, because nobody gets to experience what you and your teammates have, especially in Durham these last few years.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing is making sure you have goggles and you got to protect your eyes, because champagne is going to be poured everywhere. You're going to get sprayed. I honestly don't know how much beer is actually drank. Like, more of it just ends up being put on somebody else. But no, there's nothing like it. There's 150 games in the season. And it's every day, whether you like it or not, whether you're doing well or not, you have to show up and perform and to get to the end and to be able to just let loose and know, like, hey, like, it, you put in the work. Now it's time. You have the one day where you can just let the one night where you can just let it go. And it's something worth working for sure. Yeah.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards. Well, so what great memories this just brings. We're sitting here with Tristan Gray, who's been such a critical, integral part of the Bulls' success over the last 3 years. Won a championship in 21 without a championship series. Won a championship in 22. Went out to Las Vegas for the AAA National Championship. Beat Reno in dramatic ninth inning fashion, of course, because that's what the Bulls do. And then finished runner up in the International League Championship Series last year in 3 games to Norfolk. Let's go to Vegas. So I was unable to go. I was packed. The Bulls were playing their last regular season game in Charlotte. Flights were booked. We're leaving from Charlotte. We're heading to Vegas. Got a couple of days before the game. And I get a text in the middle of that afternoon game in Charlotte from my wife, who is up on a business trip in Boston. She picked up COVID and was quarantined in the hotel. And so I had to stay back because we have a, you know, very, very young boy, couldn't travel. And that was it. So I called that game remotely with Scott Pose. You had a chance to be not only in the game, but a central player in the game. Bulls are trailing in the ninth inning against Reno. Your friend Bly Madras comes through. So many came through. And then there was a 3-0 pitch to Tristan Gray with a couple of guys on in the ninth inning that you won't know this, but we had Miles Mastroboni on the show last week. And he said, this is a quote from him, "I was freaking out on the plane with the Rays watching that home run hit by TG on his phone. Nobody else in the plane cared, but I'm freaking out on the plane because you just hit a big shot in the ninth inning to help win the championship. Relive that home run, relive that moment, relive that Vegas experience."
Yeah. The whole Vegas experience was just insane. It was the nicest hotel place you stay at. And just the vibe, like you get there and you know what you're playing for. And the first game we blow out Nashville, which didn't expect, but it was nice. And then going into that last day, you just know it's all or nothing. And I think it was the eighth inning. We were tied and give up a homer to go down going into the top of the ninth. And I just remember everybody being there, like, we've been here almost every game this year. Like, we've done this so many times, like, we aren't going to be worried. And sure enough, walk. And then Bly hits the ball off the wall and X stumbles around third over his helmet, somehow still scores. And we're just going absolutely nuts. I think they intentionally walk Rayleigh and he's pissed off. He's throwing his bat. And then Pinto gets the huge hit to take the lead. And then just going to the 3-0, I think they had a pitching change. And I get to 3-0 and I know that Brady was going to let me swing it. So I said, if it starts here, I'm going to let it go. Mm-hmm. And I can still picture it leaving the bat. I knew off the hands. I can just see just a still shot of the ball and where it was going. And it was just like, yes, like I just overwhelmed, completely walking on Cobb nine, running the bases, and then just coming in the dugout, just unbelievably fired up as well as everybody else. And just, it was one of the cooler moments, and I'll get to have that for the rest of my life.
It was a majestic thing of beauty. There's no doubt about it. I only wish I were there to celebrate two more times. I told Brady Williams, I said, you guys owe me two celebrations here with the Nashville win and then the national championship win. But going back several months earlier in that year, an item that you had became kind of the battle cry or the purpose for the Durham Bulls, who got off to a really slow start. I think they were 8-16 through the first month, near the bottom of the standings in the IL. And then the team is going up to Buffalo. And I'm going to let you pick up the story, because this is the first time I'll have you the opportunity to give a first-person account of the item and how it became almost godlike to the Bulls over the course of the next 4 months, that then led to your home run in the AAA National Championship game.
So we were in Buffalo, and we're in the locker room. Everybody's like, you know, we're going to turn this around eventually. And I think we ended up getting a rain out. And during the rain out, my locker mate was Cal Stevenson. And so he sees my backpack, and there's a zipper that's showing a little bit of the vest. He's like, dude, what is that? It's like, did you steal a UPS vest? And I was like, no, I didn't steal a UPS vest. I worked there one of the off seasons just to make some money. And I always keep it with me to remind me, because I remember when I was delivering packages, I was like, in the season, whenever you're struggling, just know, like, you know, this is an alternative that you were doing. So he's like, dude, let me wear it. And I was like, all right. Like, so he puts it on. He's like, dude, we should do this for home runs. Like, we're delivering packages or delivering balls to people outside the stand, into the stands. And so then a few guys see him wear it. And then, so then everybody starts talking about it, and just, it's like, all right, we're going to do it. We're going to do it tomorrow. We're going to do it tomorrow. And it was a slow start, because people keep forgetting because it's so new. But I think Ford hit one to center. Ford Proctor hit one to left center. And I think we put it on him, and then from then on, I was like, all right, like, this is, and then everybody wants to put it on. It's a thing. Yeah. So that's what you hope for.
And so that was that the first thing you would pack before road trips when the Bulls were going out of town, you know, in June, in July, because if you forget that, that's bad karma, right? The run may end.
Yeah, no, I made sure that it was always going to be with me, but I made sure to absolutely pack that every time now.
Where is it now?
It's in my backpack upstairs. I'll always have it.
So let's talk about, I want to talk about your parents a little bit, because I watched your clubhouse interview the morning of your major league debut. I believe Trisha Whitaker with the Rays, the TV side, was asking some questions about your parents. First call you made when you got wind that you, after, you know, Michael Johns left your apartment after he basically did criminally trespassed to get inside to tell you you're going to the big leagues. You called your mom. It was a very emotional conversation, clearly, with you and your mom. And I heard you say your dad was kind of screaming in the background because he knew what was going on. One thing that you and I haven't talked much about was your dad was a minor league player briefly when he was, I think, 22 years old?
Around there, yeah.
Played for one season in the Gulf Coast League with the Texas Rangers. Drafted from your school, drafted from Rice.
Yeah.
Tell me about that relationship. Tell me about the tethering of your dad to Tristan through pro baseball, through Rice University, and then having Tristan, the son, get to the major leagues. As far as all the sons want to make their dads proud, and their dad sometimes can kind of live vicariously through their kids on things that maybe they weren't quite able to accomplish. But talk about that relationship and the back and forth of the accomplishments.
Yeah. So my parents had, or I was with them whenever my dad was at San Jack playing baseball. And so My dad was playing baseball. My mom was working and going to school, just, you know, providing for us while my dad was doing baseball. And then he goes to Rice for his junior and senior year. And so I'm just with him, you know, I'm hanging out, going to class with him. and he gets drafted by the Rangers. We go to Port Charlotte, actually, which is crazy. So I was already there before I went with the Rays. So we lived there. We went through the whole Gulf Coast season, and it got time to go back. And I think my dad's just like, I can't do it. Like, I don't think this is best for our family. You know, my mom's, we're working hard, and just the minor league grind is something that you can't explain until you're in it. But it's tough. And so he decided, like, what's best for my family is to get a job and provide. So baseball being tied, he never forced me or pressured me into playing baseball. I played all the sports growing up, and but I always loved baseball. And when I got to high school, I was like, I think I can get pretty good at this. And so he does live through me, but he does a great job of not, you know, saying, why do you do this? He just tries to help out whenever he can. And I think that's what made the call so special, was knowing just all that my parents, you know, my mom and my dad, like both of them. So being able to call them and say, like, hey, we did it. Like, I'm going to the show. Just nothing like it.
Yeah. I get a lot of questions from people, you know, now that I've been around minor league baseball for so long, if I would do it again. You know, I haven't gotten to the big leagues yet. May not. The odds are certainly kind of growing against that, but I've done some other really cool things within the industry. But there are a lot of sacrifices. There are a lot of things that you give up, and the nights, especially now having a 2-year-old, is a big, big factor on future and really where you want to go and where you want to be, where you want to spend your time. So to you, a slightly different question, knowing where you are in your career now and all the things that you've done and your big league debut, would you do it over again? Or what would you tell maybe your son who would be interested in getting into baseball as a career?
I would 100% do it again, for many reasons. A lot of it has to do with just the experiences that I've got to experience, but also the people that I've met and had relationships with. And obviously I met my wife. It may not have been exactly through baseball, but I would do it that way as long as I got to end up with her. So, yeah, I would 100% do it all again. As well as, I think there's a lot of things, like what I would tell my son getting into it was, it would be just at the end of the day, if you can look at yourself in the mirror and know that you did everything you could, whether it works out or not, like, you can hold your head up high and know that you gave it everything you had. And that's all you can do. Like, you can't be bitter at this game or mad at this game, because it's very hard. Not everybody gets to have the chance. So if you do get there, if you don't, like, at least you tried. So yeah.
And as you mentioned at the top, lifelong friends that you would not have made had your life not intersected with baseball, and they all were at your wedding.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Who are, we'll kind of wind things down here with Tristan Gray. Thank you so much for your time. I know it's a late night and literally the season begins tomorrow for you. So I'm grateful to you and to Maddie for permitting me to steal 30 or 40 minutes.
Come on.
who are the people that you root for? Right. I mean, everybody with the Bulls was ecstatic who have come across Tristan Gray when you got that call to the big leagues. Likewise, I know the kind of human being that you are, the kind of person that you are. You are rooting maybe harder for them than you are for yourself to either get up for that first time if they haven't yet, or to continue to grind, get up and stay, without singling out people, because it's not about that, but who are those people who you've really admired on the chase, on the grind, who you really feel deserve an opportunity to experience that?
I think it's honestly, to me, it's come to more than just the players that I've played with, because everybody that's in the minor league clubhouse is also trying to make it to the big leagues. It's such a bigger operation than just the players. There's so many guys Stacks, our clubby, he is one of the greatest human beings I've ever met in my entire life. And he does beyond what he needs to do for the people that come into his clubhouse. And he does it lovingly. And he's just one of the examples. I mean, they're the strength coaches, the athletic trainers. I mean, even yourself, like you are a big league broadcaster, and my wife and her family think so as well. They're your biggest fans. But yeah, I think I root for everybody because everybody is trying so hard. The people that I get to see and just working hard every single day to get to the common goal of getting to the big leagues is what makes, I think, one, Durham Bulls special, but just my interaction with people. Like I get to see people work really hard and help me as well. Like whenever I see that, like it just helps me continue with my fight as too.
Yeah. So. Well, I thank you and your wife and your wife's family for the words. It's very, very kind. And you're right. When you do need, you know, we're both in like outward facing jobs. Mm-hmm. Right. But not every day is great. Not every day is perfect. Not every day is 100%. You know, life is wonderful. It's an Instagram story reel. And, you know, that's just not reality. So there are days, I'm sure for you, there are days certainly for me where you really don't want to be there. You really don't want to call nine innings. You'd rather be home, and maybe you don't want to play, but you have to. And, you know, there's not an off day for the next 18 or 19 days. I mean, it can stink for a lot of reasons. So I appreciate those words as well. Two more questions for you. One will be short. One will be as long as you want it to be. And similar to the story about the UPS vest that I wanted to get you on the record for, one of the first things that I remember about you when you came to the Bulls in 2021, watching you take the field before the national anthem. And, you know, our broadcast booth is down the first base line. We got a pretty good look at the Blue Monster. And you're always right behind the mound with your teammates. But there's always something different about you paying tribute to the national anthem than others. Not better or worse. It was just different. It was an immediate respect for the anthem, for the flag. And I remember going down to you, might have been early in 22 when you came back for a full season with the Bulls. And I asked you why, because it's noticeable to me. I don't know that it was noticeable, but I wondered if there was some type of meaning, story behind it. And there was. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to tell that story as completely as you choose about why.
Yeah. So my family, I've had numerous family members that have been in the armed forces. And in high school, one of my coaches taught me that this is the most respectful way that you can do to honor the people that have fought for your country, and the way that you get to live your life now is due to their sacrifice that they chose. And so he taught me how to stand, and just for whatever reason, I was like, man, I really appreciate all of those. And obviously my family members that I've seen be affected by it, and just talk to them about it, to honor them. That's my little way of showing like, hey, if no one else here is going to show it, like, at least I will. So yeah, that's why I stand the way that I stand is something that I learned from my coach, but it's to honor those people that, you know, made the ultimate sacrifice.
And it was a tribute, if I remember correctly, to your grandfather, correct?
Yeah. My great grandfather.
Your great grandfather. Tell me about him.
Richard Gray. He was at the raising of the flag of Iwo Jima. He wasn't one of the people, holding it up, but he was there. I was fortunate enough to, you know, have met him and hung out with him and worked on his ranch. And there's him and Grandma Betty, just some stories that I love to talk with my family about. But to honor him and all that came from him, that's why I do it.
We certainly appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing. The very last question that I have will be very brief. I started this a few weeks ago with Ryan Stanek, continued with Miles Mastroboni. It's simply called Who's Next. So if you are able to be a producer for this podcast and say, this player X is the story I would want to hear. Ryan Stanek said, Willie Adames, Ryan Yarbrough. I really would like to hear their stories. Miles Mastroboni mentioned Dalton Kelly. He said he has a great story about his background. Who's Tristan Gray interested in hearing from, with Bulls connections, but of a story you think deserves to be told?
Yeah, man. Well, as soon as you said it, I 100% completely agree with Miles Mastroboni on Dalton Kelly. I still talk to him to this day, and I've been talking to him. He's a great one. I think another good one is Nathan Lukes. I know that they were a few years back, but yeah, I still talk with them. And so I would love to hear. Those would be the two names that I would throw out.
Actually just looked up about 5 or 6 hours ago to see if Lukes had made the Toronto Blue Jays opening day roster, because they open up against the Tampa Bay Rays today. So we will certainly look into that. And Dalton Kelly now has a couple of votes, so we'll track him down. Maybe you can put us in touch with him. And Nathan Lukes, I can Facebook him. And a remarkable story for each of those guys. So Tristan, it's going to be really strange, but awesome to see you at the DBAP when Jacksonville comes into town. A week and a week and a half from now, less than a week from now.
Yeah.
Best of luck to you and your time with the Miami Marlins, and where your career takes you with the Marlins and beyond, and where your marriage takes you with Maddie here and beyond. So we couldn't be happier for you. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it. See you soon.
All right. So that is Tristan Gray, today's guest on the Durham Bulls podcast. A reminder, you can listen to this in its entirety on Apple and on Spotify. And also, if you want to watch it and check out Tristan Gray and you can see his mannerisms over the course of the podcast, you can do that on the Bulls YouTube channel, Durham Bulls TV. So that's going to wrap things up. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll see you again next week on the Durham Bulls podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.